today's introduction, I'd like to explain a little about the origins of this podcast series, The Resilient Pharmacist. In the early uncertain days of COVID, it was recognised that healthcare professionals, especially those on the front line, were at risk of burnout. Pharmacists were very much on the front line in hospitals, in community pharmacies, and we were there for the public from the very beginning. So, in the Irish Institute of Pharmacy, we undertook a survey, a needs analysis, if you like, to see how pharmacists were doing. And indeed, yes, we found that they were suffering from stress and burnout. So the next step was to do something about it. And in line with our peer-led approach, we asked for the profession's guidance. As a result, we ended up with a group of individuals who had an interest in the area. They formed our mental health and well-being ambassadors, and they came up with lots of ideas on how they think the profession could be supported through signposting to other services, through mentoring programmes, and through a podcast series like this on starting the right types of conversations. When we started, we didn't really know what would come of it. It was really an effort to talk about some of the issues that we felt were relevant but seldom discussed in public. So what we've seen through the podcast is that resilience has different aspects. It matters how you manage yourself and your reactions, and also where you work and the environment around you. These themes are supported by research. Professor Zubin Austin in the University of Toronto has identified these as issues that not only occurred during COVID, but predate COVID for pharmacists. So this podcast is about exploring people's stories and perspectives. It's to bring that academic discourse to the public conversation within pharmacy. We're not necessarily offering solutions at this point. We're just increasing awareness of topics. And today I'm joined by Jean Lannan, a pharmacist who's willing to talk to us about her experiences in this area. My name is Katrina Bradley, and this is The Resilient Pharmacist. Jean, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Katrina.
I'm going to open, Jean, by just asking you first to tell me a little bit about yourself so that anybody who's listening to this can get a picture of you in their mind, and then we'll start into the discussion.
Okay, so I'm obviously a pharmacist, and I suppose I'm qualified over 10 years now. I qualified from UCC, and we were the first year to do the master's in RCSI as well. So I have mixed experience. So I started in community pharmacy in Cork, and then we moved to Dublin and I moved into industry. So I had quite an interesting job there because I got to be still a dispensing pharmacist. So I was a superintendent pharmacist in Baxter Healthcare. But I also got to be under a sort of in an industry setting, so under a quality management system. So that was sort of, I would describe it as the best of both worlds. You had a lot of the, you know, interaction with patients, the clinical side of it. You were, you know, working with other pharmacists. And then you had a lot of support systems as well. So we had a whole customer services department who used to help with the patients, help with logistics. You got lunch breaks, you got a lot of great benefits. So it was a great mix of industry and pharmacy. And then I suppose I moved back to Cork. So for the last 2 years, I have been locuming in community pharmacy. And I also trained as a coach, health and wellness coach, just because I kind of loved that aspect of working a bit closer with people. So that's what I've been doing for the last 2 years. And actually, at the moment, I am trying to get back into something industry based. So I suppose, again, looking for that perfect balance of getting to do the kind of the industry work, the quality work, but also then something that involves good interactions with people. So it's trying to strike that balance.
Okay, so thank you. That's a great overview and great diversity in your career. Now, what's interesting to me is you're on the Resilient Pharmacist podcast, but you've shared with me before that you hate the title, you hate the word resilience. So what are you doing here, Jean?
Yeah, I know. And it was interesting that we had it's a very diplomatic group, the Mental Health Forum. So the Mental Wellbeing Forum, there was a vote, and I didn't vote for Resilient Pharmacist. And I think, and we had an interesting conversation about this, because to me, my understanding of the word resilience was it sort of pushed it back on the person, that you needed to be able to be resilient and to be sort of responsive. And what's the other word they always use? Emotional agility, you know, that you can be flexible enough to respond to whatever your environment was. And I just felt like, you know, it's not really fair to put that pressure back on the person, back on the pharmacist, to completely be able to regulate themselves in whatever type of environment they're in. But I do remember then you shared, actually, I think you might be able to explain it better, but more up-to-date research that it's about, and you mentioned it there in your intro about it's the resilience of you, yourself, but also the environment that you work in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's massive. That's such a important way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's something we don't discuss enough, because, you know, even the WHO would recognise there is individual resilience, personal resilience, but then organisational and system level resilience. And Zubin Austin talks a lot about a resilient system, or having the right support systems in place for people to be at their best. So they would say that you can be somebody who has low levels of personal resilience, but if you work in a really supportive environment, you'll be fine. And you can be really tough minded and able for whatever life throws at you. But if you work in a toxic system, actually no amount of personal resilience is really going to be able to get you through, because ultimately you could find yourself in quite a fragile state as a result of working in a very toxic environment. So, you know, this aspect of what I think has been interesting in the podcast is people have shared a huge diversity of approaches. Some have found resilience through their vulnerability and through tough times. Some have really thought about how they're going to develop it. And some have just developed it along the way. So I suppose you're going to talk to us specifically about anxiety. And one of the things Zubin talks about is when it comes to personal resilience, he would suggest that there may be some personality traits within pharmacy that are not individually, everybody is the same, you know, subscribing to them, but that there are general trends. And he has described in a paper that it's the perfectionistic pessimist. And we've talked about this before, but if you think about that, anxiety, as how we're going to speak about it today, is very much wrapped up in that. But can I ask you, like, what's your perception or your experience or understanding of anxiety?
Yeah, it's funny you said it's a perfectionistic pessimism.
Yeah.
I would actually say I'm a perfectionistic optimist. And I actually think that has been very helpful, because so when I realized, like, I always would have tended towards anxiety since childhood, and then I was in my mid-20s when I realized, I actually just picked up a book that spoke about generalized anxiety, and I realized that's actually me. I experience anxiety most days, and that's what prompted me to think I should do something about this. And I think that's the optimism, is that I always believe that, you know, your anxiety will be improved, you know, and I always am seeking, you know, different ways to try different, I suppose, strategies. And I do see that as something, it's just interesting. It's something I was only thinking about recently, that I would describe myself as optimistic compared to maybe other people who might not have the same, for I suppose a multitude of reasons, to seek out maybe something that would help them. Even when I would have been in workplaces, I always believed that it was worth asking for some support. And I've done that throughout my career. It would have been a mix for maybe for anxiety, but also maybe to have sort of, if there was something else that I wanted to do, that I would have believed that it was worth asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I do see it with a lot of pharmacy colleagues, that there's something, I mean, it could be many levels, why they don't ask for certain supports, you know, at work, or it's a bugbear of mine why we don't ask for lunch breaks, you know, or... And, you know, maybe they'll say no, or maybe you'll find they'll say, actually, we can, or we'll get a support pharmacist in, or, you know, but it's, I feel like it's until pharmacists start asking for those things, we won't really get them.
Yeah.
And I see it amongst colleagues. There's a definite, and something to do with it. It's the perfectionism. It's the feeling like maybe that there's a weakness to admit you might need it, you know. I don't know. It's an interesting personality trait that I would see in myself and amongst other pharmacists, the perfectionism and the feeling you have to do it all.
Well, it's interesting, because I don't know if it is a personality trait or a learned behaviour. And I suppose it's the whole nature versus nurture thing, isn't it? Because I am actually an optimist, which I didn't realise. I thought I was a pessimist for years. And the reason I thought I was a pessimist is because I always saw the risk in things. And that came very much from my training of, where is the risk here? How do we mitigate against it? How do we manage it? But actually in my life, I realised I can be really optimistic about things. And through lots of different personal journeys, I've learned more about myself and I've evolved. But it's almost you need a trigger to get you to think about it. And like you taking up that book, that awareness that actually anxiety isn't something we should be experiencing every day. I'm going to come back to that in a second. But I suppose really the purpose that the group came up with for this podcast series was exactly that, just to raise awareness that somebody might hear it and recognize something. So, you know, anxiety is a fairly normal, natural response, and it's a response to stress and a feeling of maybe apprehension that is perfectly normal when we feel threatened. But you said, actually, this book that you found said, if you're experiencing that on a daily basis, then there's something up. And so in that moment when, you know, I presume you can remember reading that phrase and going, oh, that's me. What did you do? How did you manage it?
Well, first of all, it generated more anxiety.
Perfect. OK.
But then I just went to the GP, and I remember she gave me the option of medicines or therapy. And just because I'm a talker, I like to talk. You know, I know some people, therapy isn't their thing. I just opted for the therapy, and I had a really good, I was lucky, I got a very lovely therapist. And that was kind of, I mean, as you said, it's awareness, you know, that started my journey of sort of really kind of figuring out what anxiety is for me, or, you know, why it comes up. And I think there's still so much to learn. I still learn so much. I think it's fascinating, actually. I have a personal interest in it as well, just what the body does and emotions and anxiety. It's just so interesting.
It is.
Besides, you know, anxiety is hard. I'm not saying that it's... it can be very hard, but it has actually, I've learned a lot more about myself. And then I remember my therapist used to always explain that when you open the awareness of yourself, you then can open your awareness and understanding of others.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's really helped me, I suppose, in personal things, in work, to sort of understand other people more. So while it's a scary journey to start, it's definitely worthwhile.
And can I ask, when you presented to the GP, what did you say? You know, I think I'm suffering from anxiety, or how did you?
I'd say I just told her that I had read that thing in the book and realized that that's how I feel most days.
Okay.
And it's so much part of who you are. You don't necessarily notice, maybe, I don't know. Yeah, you sort of see it as part of who you are.
Well, I suppose you always think it's normal if you've had it all the time. You never know that other people feel differently. And I know there would have been times when I was anxious and the last thing I did is share. Really, what I did is cover it up. And they say that anxiety can be a suppressing of other feelings that you don't want to deal with. What do you think? You said that you felt anxiety as a child, but what do you think it was about?
I think there's sort of two parts that I learned about anxiety. Say the one part is, it's called, if anyone wants to look it up, it's called the window of tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about, you know, if you've kind of too many stressful inputs,
mm-hmm.
that you go out of your window of tolerance, and that's when you sort of feel the anxiety very frequently. And if you haven't learned the skills to sort of dissipate that anxious energy, that you stay outside your window.
Okay.
So that was sort of one thing that I found, like, that's the way I see anxiety. There's that sort of stress anxiety from just having too much going on. And then I think the really interesting part, and the part that you just touched on there, is the suppression of emotions is anxiety. Is there is a psychologist, her name is Hilary Jacobs Hendel, and she calls it an inhibitory emotion.
Okay.
And I never ever thought, like, that's what anxiety is doing. That, and it's exactly what you said, that there's some other emotion that you're ignoring.
Mm-hmm.
And the anxiety is sort of can sense it's there, and it's sort of filling that void instead of letting the emotion. So that's what a lot of my work now would be, is if I feel anxiety and it's not due to kind of stress,
mm-hmm.
then I know there's something I have to go into and release.
Okay. So is that what you meant by saying it can be harder in the beginning as you try to figure out what those feelings are? Or was there something else you meant?
Well, I think it actually took a long time for me to sort of be able to drop in, because anxiety just doesn't feel good in the body.
Mm.
You know, you're geared towards trying to get away from it, you mm-hmm. know? That same psychologist talks about defenses.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, things like using your phone, or I would have always been a very sociable person,
Mm-hmm.
you know, sort of out and chatting to people. And so that's the sort of thing you're avoiding going in to feel this not nice feeling.
Okay.
But you learn you have to go there. So
And
that's the not nice
so,
part.
do you find then, if chatting with people is part of your defense mechanism, do you find you actually have to actively stop yourself doing that and just tap in? Is that what you're saying? Really?
I can know quite quickly now if there's a bit of anxiety in the system, and then I'll know, okay, so I need to do something that brings me back in and brings the system back down. So it might just be as simple as go for a walk by myself without listening to something.
Okay, yeah.
You know, or I like to do a lot of dance. This probably sounds strange, but I do a lot of
No,
dance.
nothing's, and I think this is it. Nothing sounds strange. It touches on a point you said earlier, which is you need to understand what anxiety is for you and what induces anxiety for you, and then understand what dissipates anxiety for you. And I think that's one of the things we heard in the well-being survey. Some people were saying, and I could associate with this, they were saying, do not come near me with yoga or meditation or mindfulness because that's not what I need. And I think that was a very important message. And you know, some of the people who said they felt resilient, it was because they'd put a new system in work. Their employer had given them breaks. They had different aspects organizationally, or they had managed things personally by making time for the walk. One of our previous podcast contributors, Deck, was incredibly generous with explaining how he had some maladaptive, some negative ways of dealing with it. Drinking too much, withdrawing too much, doing things that just were not positive coping mechanisms. And is that what you mean by finding another way to just forget or ignore this feeling of anxiety? Finding other ways of dealing with it without even knowing that that's what you're doing. It's almost unconscious.
That's it. It comes back to the awareness thing. And the more work you do on yourself, the more you learn about yourself. And that's what I mean about, I think, you know, from people who are maybe further along the journey than you, that's what I sort of, I think this is interesting that used to happen to me all the time was I used to always sort of, I wanted to know when I'd be finished, you know, like if I do ABC, which is probably a real pharmacist thing, and this is the end result. But actually, I would be more flexible now to kind of understanding that I think the learning in a way about yourself, regardless of anxiety or not, it's actually never ending. So.
And you know what? You're really making me think of a time in my own development where I was lucky to work in an organization that had a very structured approach to development. And the very first experience I had with any sort of self-awareness was this multi-source feedback, 360-degree feedback, where different people told you their perceptions of you. And it never occurred to me that people experienced me differently to how I experienced myself. But I had a manager who recognized that I didn't like dealing with ambiguity. And that's very much, you know, you're not supposed to necessarily cope for not you're not there isn't a much tolerance for ambiguity in pharmacy. Either it's right or it's wrong, the dose is correct or it isn't. Your gut feel you suppress because actually it doesn't matter what your gut thinks in a way, if you haven't followed the legislation, the regulations, the safety, you know, they're the predominant ways. So what this mentor of mine did is she put me, she was a manager, she put me into situations that were ambiguous, that didn't have a right or a wrong answer that I had to figure out. And it was extremely stressful in the beginning, but I began to realize even if I made mistakes, it wasn't the end of the world. And I developed that tolerance for ambiguity. And it sounds like that's what you're kind of describing. It's a tolerance for not knowing where the journey will go or when it'll end, but knowing that that's okay.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, like you're saying there about right and wrong, that's something that I am still working on. And again, it's like what you said earlier as well. It's our training, you know, like what does it mean to be wrong, or to, you know, as a pharmacist, means someone could, that, you know, that's the way we think, someone could get injured, you know. And that's a massive pressure to have in your system continuously. Compared to, I do remember someone told me, that as a healthcare professional, you will make mistakes, you know, and that's a different thing to absorb and to accept. And it comes across in mental health as well, to accepting if you don't feel great, you know, that's, and to really accept is actually quite hard, because especially if you're an optimist and you're geared towards fixing, and you know, I think that's a fascinating, that, so that's what I mean. I think it's not to turn anyone off the journey of working with your anxiety, but if you like learning, which most pharmacists probably
Which
do.
most pharmacists probably do. And what it is a different type of learning, isn't it? It's completely different. I had an incident recently. I've been undertaking a HDIP in psychology, and in exams, in pharmacy exams, you wrote down as much information as you could, as quickly as you could, and as accurately as you could. And so I used the same approach in the psychology, and the feedback was, "Oh no, you've too many words. It's, too much information. You need far less, and you can be open to kind of exploring ideas." And this was foreign to me. I felt, well, if I relay the information, I show that I've listened, I show that I've learned, and it just really highlighted for me that actually we are conditioned to give the right answer. And I just to touch on a point you said there, people do talk about the way healthcare professionals will make mistakes, but what I think is different in other healthcare professions is your mistake is often in the diagnosis or in the evaluation or in the treatment regimen, and that's often can be subjective. Whereas with pharmacy, if you have dispensed the incorrect dose or amount, or if there is a difficulty with the treatment that shouldn't be in place, you are responsible for a right or wrong answer. So the space to be able to accept that ambiguity and possibility of error is a very different experience, isn't it?
I never actually thought about that. That you might think compare yourself to other healthcare professionals, and but the way you explained that was very good there actually. And I think I heard something on the radio before about the different diagnoses that doctors may make. But you're right. There's no, we either get the dose right or we got it wrong or we picked the wrong drug. So that's really interesting to actually think that there's this additional sort of pressure or whatever on pharmacists that you really have to get it
Well,
right.
I think if you get it wrong, it's wrong. If you
Yeah,
have
exactly.
dispensed something incorrectly, it is incorrect. And I think internationally, in some jurisdictions, pharmacists are becoming more involved in the area of prescribing. And Dawn Davin is a fabulous pharmacist here in Ireland who is trained as a prescriber, but she said a lot of her training was about learning to work in the grey. And her mentor and her working with other medical colleagues very much was about learning that it isn't black and white, that there's loads of grey, and that that's what a lot of the other healthcare professions learn to navigate. Whereas I don't know, although we do talk about ethical issues around medicine supply, we always have that additional burden of we could do something wrong that would generate harm, and we don't want to do that. So it is an anxiety provoking environment if you haven't stopped to think about how you're going to deal with it, isn't it?
Oh yeah, massively. And I was just briefly trying to think back, and in my degree or in the master's, I did another diploma with RCSI in quality and safety in healthcare, and I suppose that was only about 3 years ago. And at that point, there definitely was more, and it was mixed healthcare professionals actually. There was more emphasis on when an error happens, how do you look after your staff? And I do definitely remember thinking that was something I hadn't really heard before, that your staff will be affected greatly by an error, depending on the severity of it. And I suppose you often think the priority of, obviously it being the patient,
Yeah, which it is,
but
but
yeah. And they talked about, people who make an error and then don't return to work, because they couldn't sort of
yeah.
get past that or they weren't supported.
Isn't it interesting? Because I've heard about this is it's almost the second victim.
That's it,
So
yeah.
yeah, the second victim aspect, and I never heard about that when we were in pharmacy either. So it was always thinking about the first victim of an error or a problem being the patient. And I was mesmerized when I heard the concept of a second victim being yourself, the perpetrator of something that you didn't intend but happened. And yeah, maybe we need to start that conversation as well.
Yeah, and it's that sort of antidote to the pharmacist being perfect and almost non-human, that they are resilient enough to withstand whatever, all the different things that can happen in community pharmacy.
Isn't that really an interesting juxtaposition of the pharmacist almost as non-human And then what you said earlier about that understanding of humanity and feeling and suppression of feeling, you know, it isn't healthy and it
No.
manifests in the body.
Yeah, and I think even, I used to often think about this when I was locuming, and I'd seen it. I've locumed in a lot of pharmacies in Cork and Dublin. And this thing of the subhuman thing, it's like pharmacists don't need to go to the toilet, or if they go, they have to go super quick because someone could be on the phone or looking for the pharmacist. If you really assess that, that's so bizarre.
Yeah.
And, I don't know many other professions that that would be a thing.
And what other people have said, I empathize. I can recognize that. I think we all recognize that. If you've worked in pharmacy, you know, that issue of not getting a chance to use the bathroom, and then when you do, somebody knocking to say there's a prescription to be checked, and you just think, can you give me 2 minutes?
This is my quiet space.
Yeah, but do you know what people have talked about? Not only that, not only working the 12-hour shifts, not only working the 6 days in a week or the 3 weeks without a break, but actually nearly valorizing that, treating it as a badge of honor. And that word badge of honor has come up in two or three of the podcasts. Do you recognize that within pharmacy?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose from being in industry, I personally am so distanced from it in the sense of, to me, that's madness. But I absolutely, when I worked with a couple of other pharmacists in industry, and when we went in, they all thought it was hilarious that we were so excited by the free tea and coffee, the free fruit, and the lunch breaks. That this was every pharmacist that came in from community, this was a they all thought it was so funny because they were used to working in
Yeah.
more regular office hours. But I see it especially. I mean, it was very hard for when I started, it was just in recession, and I would have seen the pharmacists that would have been maybe 10 years older than me. And they had it so hard. I know maybe pharmacists who had maybe extra, commitments and things at that point, and then there was cuts, and I th thought that generation, and maybe there's a bit of a legacy of that as well, that they had to work those extra hours. And that has to have been a massive pressure for people to have to deal with. And maybe some of it is there's the valorizing part of it as well, but there was also probably there must be a legacy from the recession as well, that pharmacists may still sort of
I think
carry.
you're
I don't know.
right. Yeah. And I think we've slowly crept to places where it's more anxiety inducing. So, for example, you know, I know before the recession or when I qualified, people did shut up shop for an hour for lunch and nobody thought anything of it. And then competition and commercialization all started to evolve. And if one pharmacy in a town stayed open for lunch, then they all felt they needed to. And slowly it crept up on us. And I think you're right. Lots of things that started in different times have almost crept in and become normalized. But I think that's very interesting that people find it so funny. It's something that's come up in the other podcasts as well, that when people see pharmacists sometimes reactions to things, they comment on it, and it's through those sorts of reasons that you kind of realize, oh, maybe this isn't everybody's experience of something. Okay. So with respect to what would you say to pharmacists? What are the sorts of things that you think would help somebody if they maybe recognize a little of what you're saying, or even if they're wondering if maybe they should explore it? What are your recommendations for your colleagues?
I suppose it probably goes full circle to what we were saying about it's different for each person. I would definitely suggest, so if you get a sense of something that might help you, just to explore it. So say, for example, if you think you maybe have an interest in doing therapy, but there's something that's stopping you from doing it, maybe spend 5 minutes writing down what you think it is that might be stopping you, or talk to someone else. I've always found if I actually voice some concern, get it out of your head, that actually people can be unbelievable for sort of being supportive, and sort of helping you kind of clarify a few things. And then I would say definitely in the work environment, if you have a sense that something might help, I would say ask. And even if you've done a little bit of prep beforehand, maybe to if you were looking for to close the shop for 30 minutes, that you might do some research into the actually statistically from 12 to 12:30 it's not that busy, or actually just to have a think about it. So from the perspective of your employer, that you're not sort of you're going a bit prepared. That has really worked for me in the past, actually, to make it sort of easier for them and to lay out the benefits for whatever change you might be asking for. And I would say, you know, there's obviously it's a cultural thing in pharmacy, and culture shift takes time, unfortunately. But to start asking, to start chatting with your you know, I have still friends with all my my pharmacy class, and we discuss these things a lot. To start the conversation, I think even something like a podcast like this is really interesting to allow people the space to talk about it, to think about it, and then hopefully to take some action that is sort of aligned with what they think might be beneficial to them.
So what I'm hearing there, Jean, is that there isn't one size fits all. It's going to be very individual, and it's your responsibility, if you like, to yourself and to your patients ultimately, to tap into and stop and acknowledge those feelings. And I suspect, because I experienced it and most people I talked to in pharmacy experienced it, if you feel like you're not coping, our go-to thinking is often, it must be me. It must be that I'm not good enough. Okay, well, look, I think what's really helpful from this conversation is if it just prompts somebody to think, what if I stopped and actually thought, I don't have to be able to do it all. This isn't actually normal in most organisations, that, you know, and we've talked about the fact that your staff in a community pharmacy, at least, will get their lunch, will get their break, and would go bonkers if they didn't. And yet I think it's because the pharmacist is the most highly paid person, they almost feel like they should be able to do everything and not have that. And then the legal requirement, of course. But for whatever reason, hopefully this discussion will have prompted people to think, well, what if I stopped and just listened to myself? Is there anything in terms of a parting piece of advice? I know you've said to people just tap into what helps them, but what would you like to see happen out of this podcast?
You know, the one thing that I just thought that I didn't mention, which is something that it's, you know, it's always spoken about in mental well-being, is compassion. And they talk about in healthcare professionals, compassion fatigue. But actually, I think the real work of a lot of mental well-being work is compassion. And it's actually hard. Well, I don't know. In my experience, it's sort of multi-layered. And again, it takes a bit of time to kind of fully get it. And maybe you spend your whole life fully getting it. But I think that's the real compassion piece, is to have compassion for ourselves. Okay. I think that's the basis, a lot of the work, to sort of really be able to absorb, it's okay that this is, you know, this is a stressful job, or it's okay that I need to ask for some support.
Yeah.
And to allow that compassion for yourself. And ultimately, going full circle, the more compassion you have for yourself, the more compassion then you can have for your co-workers, for your patients. I think they go hand in hand. It's hard to have one without the other. If you're completely stressed out, you're probably more likely to, you know, not be as, compassionate with your patients. So that's probably my last advice. I know we hear about it all the time, compassion, but it's, if maybe you don't feel like going yet into starting therapy, or maybe asking your boss, or, you know, to do even sort of meditations on compassion. And they're not meditations like fingers crossed, that sort of thing. It's actually just entering into your brain a new way of thinking.
Okay.
And I think that's maybe that's an accessible place for people to start.
Well, it's interesting because I've had the journey of trying to be compassionate and to myself. And in the beginning, I didn't really know what it meant. People said, be compassionate. I had no clue how to do that. And I remember in a very tough time, a friend saying to me, look after yourself. And I was like, what am I supposed to do to look after myself? What are you saying? She goes, well, start with just getting a break, having lunch, go to bed. And I was like, oh, you know, it really was a light bulb moment where I thought, oh, you know, I can kind of afford myself the care that I afford my children, and almost treating yourself just like another person that you need to take care of worked for me. But like you say, everybody needs to find what works for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, thank you so much for such an interesting discussion, for sharing some of those thoughts. And hopefully, like all of our podcasts, it starts a conversation, and even just starts somebody thinking. If people want to hear more, they can connect with us at the Institute of Pharmacy or on the Twitter at Resilient Pharm. But I'd love to hear if this is something that other people feel. But from my own experiences, I know for sure that it is. So best of luck in the online ongoing ambiguous journey of self-discovery, Jean. It sounds like you've done amazing work already, and thank you for sharing your experiences today.
Thank you, Katrina.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Pharmacist. If you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you listened to this episode. And for more information, you can follow us on Twitter at Resilient Pharm.
You're probably more likely to, you know, not be as, compassionate with your patients. So that's probably my last advice. I know we hear about it all the time, compassion, but it's, if maybe you don't feel like going yet into starting therapy or maybe asking your boss or, you know, to do even sort of meditations on compassion, and they're not meditations like fingers crossed, that sort of thing. It's actually just entering into your brain a new way of thinking.
Okay.
And I think maybe that's an accessible place for people to start.
Well, it's interesting because I've had the journey of trying to be compassionate and to myself. And in the beginning, I didn't really know what it meant. People said, be compassionate. I had no clue how to do that. And I remember in a very tough time, a friend saying to me, look after yourself. And I was like, what am I supposed to do to look after myself? What are you saying? She goes, well, start with just getting a break, having lunch, go to bed. And I was like, oh, you know, it really was a light bulb moment where I thought, oh, you know, I can kind of afford myself the care that I afford my children, and almost treating yourself just like another person that you need to take care of worked for me. But like you say, everybody needs to find what works for them.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. Well, look, thank you so much for such an interesting discussion, for sharing some of those thoughts. And hopefully, like all of our podcasts, it starts a conversation and even just starts somebody thinking. If people want to hear more, they can connect with us at the Institute of Pharmacy or on the Twitter at Resilient Pharm. But I'd love to hear if this is something that other people feel. But from my own experiences, I know for sure that it is. So best of luck in the ongoing ambiguous journey of self-discovery, Jean. It sounds like you've done amazing work already. And thank you for sharing your experiences today.
Thank you, Katrina.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Pharmacist. If you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you listened to this episode. And for more information, you can follow us on Twitter at Resilient Pharm.